the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, the good news is Americans are living longer. The bad news, as we age, we're more susceptible to some debilitating diseases such as dementia and Alzheimer's. Joining me on the program is Dr. Gary Small. He's professor of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences at the Parlow Solomon Professor on Aging at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. He's also author of a new book called 2 Weeks to a Younger Brain. Doctor, over the last couple of years, you've seen a lot of software programs that have come out, cognitive training software, brain games. Let's talk about them. Are they really effective in arresting or enhancing the brain's functionality? I know there have been a number of tests, a number of claims made in advertising. I'd like to get your view on their effectiveness.
Some of the games are effective, and it depends how an individual uses them, whether they overuse them or underuse them, and what they're trying to train their brains to do. We did a study a number of years ago where we found that just searching online can activate our neural circuits, and it can be done very quickly. We can train an older person to search online for the first time, and we see increased activity in the frontal lobe. Now, whether that leads to improvement in everyday memory abilities, in thinking capacity, and other mental skills is not certain.
I know there's been studies done that if we do things that challenge our brain, for example, my wife's grandmother lived into her late 90s, was sharp as a tack. She was a bridge master, but things like playing bridge, learning a foreign language, learning to dance, doing something different, training our minds to do something that we haven't done before, is that more effective than, let's say, sitting in front of a computer playing some games?
That depends. We always say train but don't strain your brain. So you want to engage in mental activities that are fun and challenging, but not too challenging, because that will be stressful and the person will get bored, as they will if the game is too easy. There are computer games and apps and programs that have been designed to train specific mental skills, and they've been tested in scientific settings to show that they do actually work. So, for example, a company I consulted with a number of years ago, Dacom Brain Fitness, they developed some games, and one of the psychologists at UCLA did a study and showed that when people played these games for maybe 20 minutes a day for a few months, there was significant improvement in everyday memory skills. And there are other examples of games that have been tested. Scientists at the University of California in San Francisco have studied a game called NeuroRacer that involves keeping a race car on a windy road while informative and uninformative road signs pop up. So it trains multitasking skills. And that group has shown that after playing for a few weeks or so, that a 75-year-old can multitask at the same level as an untrained 20-year-old.
Now, are these games out there? I mean, in the medical profession, there's always ratings. Is there any kind of rating system in terms of these games out there? Because there are a number of sites out there that make a lot of claims as to the effectiveness of their software program. But is there anything that you have looked at UCLA or have rated games or programs for their effectiveness?
To my knowledge, there's not a scientific group that has rated these games. I mean, if you're looking at an app and you're going to download that on your phone, of course, you're going to see customer ratings and how much people like the games, how much fun they are. So I think for this kind of approach to be successful, it has to be engaging, it has to be fun, so people come back for more. If there's a social component to it, it tends to be stickier, so to speak. So if you look at a game like Words with Friends, a lot of people do that because it's fun. It's like a Scrabble type of game. Now, whether that actually improves your vocabulary or improves your everyday memory, I don't know that it does. But there are other interesting games that do seem to have an impact. There's been a lot of research looking at games that are similar to the old game of concentration. There was actually a television show that some of us baby boomers may remember. And you can play the game even with a deck of cards where you try to remember the placement of certain cards after you turn them over. Well, if you play this kind of game and it's done in a certain way, you can actually improve what's called working memory. Now, working memory is very short-term memory, the kind of memory we use to hold information in mind long enough to use it. So if you call directory assistance, you get a phone number, and you dial that number, that's working memory. You're not going to remember that number 10 minutes from then. But it turns out if you improve your working memory, it actually transfers to your ability to think and reason, actually a form of IQ called fluid intelligence. So it is possible to build these different mental skills by playing these various games.
Now, I know you've written a number of books about dementia and Alzheimer's, and you've come to the conclusion, I think, that much of this, close to 75% of this, is lifestyle versus, let's say, just pure genetics. Can you define that for our listeners? When you talk about lifestyle, does that mean the way we live, the stress in our lives, whether we exercise, whether we diet, whether we do things that keep our brains active, social networks? Define lifestyle and what makes it effective in perhaps postponing or resting or preventing dementia and Alzheimer's.
So the MacArthur study of successful aging defined success as we age as mental and physical success. And the conclusion from that study was what you alluded to, that non-genetic factors, and much of this does have to do with lifestyle, these factors are more important in determining how long and how well we live. And I tend to cluster these kind of lifestyle strategies into several groups. Mental stimulation, somewhat of what we've been talking about so far. Physical exercise, stress management and mindfulness is another area. Diet, and an area that overlaps with some of these would be social engagement. And finally, healthcare and making wise decisions about different choices. For example, whether to smoke or not, whether to wear a helmet, if you ride a bicycle. And the accumulating data shows how important these factors are. So if we take physical exercise, I would probably rank that as one of the most important because we have the best science on it. And studies show that if you get your heart to pump oxygen and nutrients to your brain will be bigger, it will function better, and it will delay the onset of Alzheimer's symptoms. It also gets your body to produce endorphins, which improves your mood, and a chemical called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which actually gets your brain cells to sprout branches and communicate more effectively. When we look at diet, the number one issue is overweight and obesity, which is an epidemic around the world. If you're overweight, it doubles your risk for Alzheimer's disease. If you're obese, that quadruples the risk. But the good news is, when people lose weight, their memory rapidly improves. And of course, the kinds of foods we ingest are important. Most people don't get enough omega-3 fats from fish and nuts and flaxseed. They don't get enough fruits and vegetables that are antioxidant and protect the brain from oxidative stress that occurs with age. And there's too much ingestion of processed foods and refined sugars that are not good for your body and not good for your brain. And then stress management is critically important. We know that chronic stress actually shrinks the memory centers of the brain. And whether it's meditation or yoga or tai chi, these approaches can improve cognitive abilities, mood, and even increase life expectancy.
So, doctor, would you say it's just not one thing that you do that makes up this lifestyle? It's usually a combination, as you just went through there. You talked about, you know, obviously eliminating stress, exercise, getting oxygen to the brain, and also diet. Are there particular foods? I mean, you see these commercials on television talking about supplements that are great for the brain or enhance the brain's function. Any truth to that? Or are there foods out there that we can eat that have been proven to be very beneficial to brain health?
So there is some emerging research in the area of supplements, and some supplements have shown benefits in the short term. But a lot of what's sold does not have evidence from double-blind placebo-controlled studies. Now, these are studies where you take a group of people who actually get the supplement or nutrient and a group that gets a placebo, an ineffective one, and neither the investigators nor the volunteers know who's getting what. And that's the only way you can really tell if the stuff works. So there's more research going on in that area, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to get more data on that. And I'd like to recommend that people try to get their nutrients from their diet. And it's certainly possible to do that. And in my books, you mentioned The Latest 2 Weeks to a Younger Brain, we go into some detail on how each of us can do that, to eat a diet that is both nutritious and delicious.
Now, there's all kinds of diets out there. There's the Mediterranean diet, there's vegetarian, there's vegans, there's the paleo diet. Have you found any one of those kind of diets in particular to be most beneficial?
The Mediterranean-style diet has probably the most evidence that it's brain protective. Some of these others, like the paleo and some others that you mentioned, I think there's less evidence. It may help people in general. Vegetarians tend to be more fastidious about their health, and they tend to do well. But their challenge, of course, is to make sure they get enough protein. Because as we age, there's a problem called sarcopenia, where older people lose their muscle mass. And that is not a good health situation to be involved in.
I know that there have been a number of studies in terms of health as we age. For example, they recommend as people age, weightlifting to strengthen the bones, cardio. Are there particular exercises? I mean, or it can be just as simple as going for a half an hour or an hour walk each day. Is something as simple as that, or is it, let's say, require a little bit more complexity, a combination of maybe not only cardio, but also weightlifting and things like yoga or Tai Chi to maintain flexibility and de-stress?
I think the important consideration is what works for the individual so they keep coming back. Weekend warriors are not going to fare well. They're more likely to injure themselves. They're not going to get the steady workout. And I often recommend that people who are starting just get a 15-minute brisk walk every day. Pick a time. It could be after dinner. It could be in the morning. And that becomes a routine. And then you can build from there in terms of your cardiovascular fitness. In addition to that, it's very important to get some strength training. The studies have shown that weightlifting or TheraBand-type exercises that increase your muscle strength provide an additional cognitive benefit. And I think the final issue that particularly older people need to keep in mind is balance. A lot of older people fall and injure themselves, and so some kind of balance training, I think, is very important.
Now, you've done a number of studies, and in your book, you have a chapter on there. It's a program, a 2-week program to a younger brain. Let's talk a little bit about that, because it seems to incorporate many of the things that we've been talking about, from diet to exercise, de-stressing, and a number of things, but it's not very difficult. Let's talk about that for a moment and how practical it can be to put into effect.
The idea of the 2-week program is to get people started, is to take these different approaches and exercises to manage stress better, to get some daily cardiovascular exercise, to plan out a reasonable diet. All that is incorporated into the 2-week program so people begin to form healthy lifestyle habits. I see a lot of people in my practice, and I take a holistic approach where I deal with the medical issues, but also the lifestyle issues. And often when I get to the lifestyle issues and I recommend a certain diet or I recommend exercise, the reaction is, "Doc, don't you have a pill?" So I think it's hard for people to change their behavior. And this is a way to make it easy, to show them that it's fun. And once they get started, then it becomes addictive. Then they get into the habit of it. And that's what they need. 2 weeks is not going to make your brain younger if you stop after 2 weeks. But it's just enough time to begin to form those healthy brain habits.
Speaking of pills, doctor, what advances are being made? We've seen advances made on heart disease. We've seen advances in cancer treatments. What about advances in dementia and Alzheimer's in terms of drug therapies? What is going on in that realm that can improve or at least arrest the disease or delay it?
There are advances, but it's been slower than many of us would like. There's been a lot of drug development aimed at clearing out the abnormal amyloid plaque deposits that accumulate in the memory and thinking centers of the brain. And that approach has not been successful over the last few decades. But there are studies trying to develop medicines that cut down on inflammation in the brain. We think that's a very important problem in the brain. And even beyond the drug development phase, there's a whole area of what's called neuromodulation, using electrical signals, magnets, ultrasound waves to activate or deactivate groups of neurons in the brain to help improve brain health and memory. And in all these areas, our research group is very interested and we're pursuing different studies.
I want to come back to brain games because you have a whole chapter in that. And that may be easier for some people to do because most adults today are computer savvy. We have tablets or even our cell phones or computers today. Let's talk about some of those brain games. In your book, you have a listing of several sites or computer sites that you can go to. Are there any that you have found in your studies to be much more effective in terms of results?
Well, that's a tough question to answer because saying one is more effective really means that you've done a head-to-head comparison. So you've taken brain game A and compared it to brain game B and shown one is better than the other. And generally, studies have not been conducted in that way. Now, there have been some studies that have looked at specific effects of these games. And I mentioned one that I'm familiar with, the Dacom Brain Fitness, where they did show improvement in memory after 2 months and even greater improvement after 6 months. There's the game NeuroRacer that seems to improve multitasking skills. There's a game that I didn't mention that is called IQ Boost. It's an app, and it has a form of this concentration game that helps people with short-term memory or working memory. And then there's a lot of others out there. I mean, I just haven't vetted them and looked at them. I mean, I would guess that some of them may be effective and a lot of them are not that effective. But what's important, I think, for the consumer is to play games that are fun. That's going to engage your mind. And if you can keep challenging yourself, it's probably going to be a fun mental activity, even if we don't have the scientific proof that it's going to improve your memory.
And doctor, when you take a look at all of this, let's talk, number one, about prevention. And secondly, what if you do have, or let's say between spouses, you notice that one spouse has the beginning signs of dementia. What are steps that can be taken? In other words, are there things that you can do to maybe either reverse the process or arrest it?
So in the area of prevention, we're actually launching a new study at UCLA, the UCLA Alzheimer's Prevention Project, where we've developed a curriculum that trains people to pretty much do what I've written out in the book, In 2 Weeks to a Younger Brain, and the system to do that. And we're going to be testing that systematically in people who are at risk for Alzheimer's disease. And there are a lot of reasons people are at risk. It's the their age. Could be they have diabetes or they have high blood pressure or some other factor like obesity or overweight. So I'm convinced that these approaches will help prevent in the sense of delaying onset of symptoms. It's not going to cure the problem, but it could give you a few years of being symptom-free, which can be very meaningful in people's lives. So I think that's really the way to go, particularly if you have a risk factor. You need to get healthy, and it's never too early, never too late to live a healthy brain lifestyle. Now, if somebody is in the beginning phases of dementia kinds of symptoms, that is where their memory and other cognitive skills are starting to interfere with their everyday life, it's very important to see a doctor to get a medical evaluation, because even though we don't have drugs that will cure the disease, there are medicines that can improve symptoms and keep people functioning at a higher level longer.
And doctor, as we close, there's another study that comes in and talks about as we age, our internal clocks begin to change and a new timekeeper sort of kicks in. We heard about older people that need less sleep. They go to bed earlier. They wake up earlier. And, you know, you see this even in restaurants cater to early dining. Let's talk about that. And is this harmful? Is there anything that can be done about it? Or is it just part of the natural process of getting older and aging?
Sleep patterns change as we age. As we get older, we tend not to need as much sleep. We have lighter sleep. And I think it's something that is an issue because a lot of older people do have sleep problems. As far as eating early, that depends on the individual. But I see some older people who develop cognitive symptoms that they start sleeping later and later during the day. And I think part of it is that it's stressful for them to engage socially during the day. And this is a way for them to sort of fade away from their social interactions. And I don't think that's good. It's very important to maintain social contacts. So I think we need to deal with sleep in a reasonable way and try to help people engage during the day.
Well, listen, doctor, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. The name of your book, 2 Weeks to a Younger Brain by Dr. Gary Small. Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. All the best to you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest.
Interesting interview with Dr. Gary Small, because I always wonder about that. If you use your brain a lot, and I think people just don't nowadays, you know, but I've seen people that always do crossword puzzles. My mother did that for years and years and years, worked crossword puzzles from the New York Times and elsewhere as to whether or not it keeps your brain healthy. So anyway.
Yeah, they say that too. People that play bridge. I mean, Warren Buffett, a good example. Warren is, 85? I remember my mother-in-law played bridge until she passed away. And my wife's grandmother was a bridge master in her late 90s. Sharp as a tack, too. So exercising that brain, whether it's learning something new, dancing, a foreign language, painting, doing something that is different, reading, taking a class, going to college, you know, educating yourself, as all kinds of things that you can do to keep a healthy brain. Most important thing, I think I've read all three of Dr. Small's books, is that so much of dementia and Alzheimer's is a reflection 75% of lifestyle rather than it is DNA. So interesting book. Recommend if you have a chance, pick it up. Some great stuff in there, and especially his 2-week program to get back to a healthy brain. Well, we've run out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.